Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Live Nation presents Concert Week.
From now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 summer shows.
That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage,
Alanis Morissette,
Cage the Elephant,
Celeste Barber,
Dierks Bentley,
Janet Jackson,
Meghan Trainor,
Peso Pluma,
Sean Paul,
Sum 41, and many more.
For way less.
Grab your tickets now through May 14th to see all of the artists you love all summer long.
For just $25 each.
Visit LiveNation.com/concertweek to buy now.
That's LiveNation.com/concertweek to buy now.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax. Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codename Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It is the top of the week as we hurtle headlong through March. Now, we have some adventures that we'll catch you up on in the near future, but for now, there is so much strange stuff happening. There are people smuggling things, as ever, but maybe not the things you would expect. We are going to... I don't want to say it, but we might have some hot takes on the Red Sea. We'll get to it later. For now, we have to address, of course, one of the most pressing issues in the world of conspiracy and international discourse in the modern day. Let's go to you, Noel. You're a fan of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. We've talked about Roald Dahl.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Roald Dahl's books, especially the creepy ones. And I'm with folks that are saying that even the slightly hasn't aged super well stuff should not be like rewritten. I think that's weird. I think once we start doing that, it's like a real slippery slope. So just getting my soapbox moment in on that. But I'm also a fan of the Gene Wilder movie. I think it's very of its age. You know, the chocolate waterfall looks like diarrhea. That's true.
It's also very stuff they don't want you to know. There is no earthly way of knowing.
That's true. That's the tunnel. Yeah, the tunnel of doom. Taken, reappropriated by Marilyn Manson for the video for his hit song Dope Hat off of Smells Like Children, Portrait of an American Family. And I believe on that record, too, I'm sorry, I'm showing my former Mansonite roots. There's a sample, or at least he does the There's No Earthly Way of Knowing, and the Rowers Keep Arguing, but he does it like in a horrible Marilyn Manson kind of way. And that guy sucks. He's done terrible things. Not a good dude. But anyway, yeah, I think it, you know, Roald Dahl looms large. He's become such a institution in Hollywood with, you know, remakes, and some of them good, some of them not so good. I thought the Tim Burton Charlie and the Chocolate Factory was quite bad. But then there was a little run of some of his short stories that were done by Wes Anderson in his short films, and all of those are excellent. They're just really, really, really cool. Henry Sugar, I believe, was one where the sets kind of move, and it's just it really hits the spirit of the whimsy of Roald Dahl. And this is big money, you guys. I mean, we have got the Timothée Chalamet reboot of the franchise, you know, with him as the star of his young Wonka, with sort of a backstory. And people are itching to capitalize on that, as was the case in Scotland, in Glasgow, to be more precise, where you see these things all the time, some better than others, things like the Museum of Ice Cream, or the like the Balloon Museum. Mm-hmm. Often they have museums in them, or like Van Gogh, the Experience.
There's right, sort the of, Experience. That's right. Luminarium is a chain.
But those are really cool.
Some of them are better than others. I heard the Van Gogh one sucked. And was like kind of mid, you know, and just was a little bit underwhelming. And they're often quite expensive, and they're often set up in these massive industrial warehouse spaces. Ooh. And they travel around depending on their success. You might be coming to a town near you, some kind of roadshow version of it. You know, Meow Wolf is a great example of an excellent one that is like so immersive. We went to the one in Vegas, but they also have franchises of these, you know, in other countries and other cities. But in Glasgow, something called Willy's Chocolate Experience was scheduled to run for 2 days only, February 24th and 25th, promising all sorts of wonders, you know, to the good people of Glasgow and their children. I think the website has, it hasn't, it's still up. And this event was promoted by a company with a really awesome name for this show, House of Illuminati, folks, no joke, curated or created this event, and they promoted it as being a cutting-edge experience that uses artificial intelligence for scripting and for concept design and all this stuff. And on their website or whatever, wherever the stuff was posted originally, now it's kind of been screenshotted and posted all over the place. They have some of these AI generated images, which are just like the quintessential kind of sort of psychedelic nightmare fuel that you would imagine an AI would spit out when asked to reproduce Willy Wonka scapes, you know, where things are just like a little too twisty. The lollipops, you know, spiral off into oblivion and kind of awkward and uncomfortable ways. And things look a little too wormy, kind
almost
of.
Almost Manson-esque.
Well, very much so. I mean, there is a macabre quality to what they're trying to pitch as this wondrous thing. And that extends very much to the text on some of these images that you can still find anywhere. People are referring to this stuff as cursed. But the initial text on this kind of, you know, digital promo flyer thing promises the following. Cat-gicating. Live performances. Catchy tons. Exarsurdre lollipops. And a paradise of sweet teats. And it's at the top's got a big banner saying entertainment. And all this stuff was put out there like they didn't proofread it or something. Again, this we're proponents of using stuff as tools. AI has the potential to be an interesting thing in the hands of the right people, but when you just feed it nonsense and say, do a thing like this and don't have any oversight, you're going to get cat-gigating and enchaining entertainment and apparently a paradise of sweet teats. So all this was promised for the, I believe, nominal fee of around $45 American. I think it was maybe 35 pounds, something like that, or 35 euro.
You're right. 35 British pounds. So, because it's Scotland, so $44.58 US.
And the AI part, you know, also was promoted as being the source of the scripting for the actors. This is not like an AI, you know, virtual reality experience. This is like a brick and mortar pop up type experience that they're promising to recreate the stuff, you know, that's depicted in these really kind of wormy, disturbing images. I'm looking at one right now, and it's got real sandworm vibes. And like you look in the bushes, and there are these bunny rabbits, but they look like they're smiling with like really rancid, like pointy teeth almost. Like, again, I'm looking at it not zoomed in, but you know the way AI does, where it'll just kind of one part of something will be just a little smeared or a little kind of wonky and not right. Wonky, that's appropriate. But anywho, the scripting for this was also generated by AI and was meant to be memorized by the actors who were hired and showed up the day before the launch of the thing. And Ben pointed out off air that there's some amazing accounts from some of these actors who were just trying to make a day rate, you know, for doing this thing. They didn't know much about it. They showed up assuming that the thing hadn't been completed. A lot of times these things, you know, if you've ever been to a circus even, or like Cirque du Soleil, they're building that stuff up to the wire a lot of times the day before, like before. That's not to malign Cirque du Soleil. They probably have it up longer than that. But for some of these maybe lower budget things, you know, time and personnel are at a premium, so they're trying to maximize. So these actors were giving them the benefit of the doubt. However, when the day one came and families and their kids were streaming in to this industrial warehouse, there wasn't any change from what they had witnessed the night before, which was kind of these scantily decorated walls with these like backdrops that are just comically small, where it's almost like they just took some of these AI images and, you know, printed them on fabric, but not very big. And it's in the middle of a giant bare, like rock looking wall, like a concrete looking slab wall. There's like a rainbow entryway that you can see the seam on it. There's a lab they call the Imagination Lab, where there are these Oompa Loompa type things, which are called, I believe, in the script are called Wonka Doodles or Wonky Doodles, something mm-hmm. to that effect. Mm-hmm. And the image, I believe, that first went viral, which is a term that I hate, but you get what it means, was an image of this young woman playing an Oompa Loompa and looking really bummed out.
Yeah.
Surrounded by what appears to be the things that you would find in a meth lab.
What? I was just going to say, the way I'm looking at it from the images that are available that I've seen mostly on X, it looks like if I, Matt Frederick, decided to yeah. like make my son a birthday party inside a giant warehouse and I could only access the things that I, as on Matt hand. Frederick, could access and like yeah. find in a couple days and like throw
yeah.
together.
Yeah.
It feels exactly like that. Like
objection. Objection. You real name Matt Frederick would do a much better job. No,
I agree.
I think it would be really close to this, guys. I would find somebody who'd be like, hey, can I give you $45 to like pretend to be whatever you just said, Noel?
Yeah.
A Wonka Doodle.
Wonka Doodle. And let's not forget about the unknown who was named the unknown because his name is unknown. This is all stuff that the AI script generated. We're going to do a little reading because Gizmodo has the whole thing linked out and posted. And it all checks with what we've heard the actors describing, you know, in the little bits of commentary they've offered to the whole thing. But it was apparently so bad that parents, like, their kids were crying because this unknown thing, which is just like a person wearing like a spooky robe kind of, and like one of those silver masks that you get at like Spirit Halloween, and like and a wig, does a really serious jump scare. I didn't sign up for I don't like jump scares. I'm a 40-year-old man and I don't go to haunted houses because jump scares freak me out. So I would have been irritated too, because apparently the kids were in tears. Not to mention, once they made it through that traumatic event, they were only given a single jelly bean and a half a glass of like Tesco brand lemonade. It's wow. And that's the image of the Oompa Loompa that went viral, is the station where the jelly beans were handed out. And there's images because people were taking videos with their phones just to document this debacle for posterity, I guess, to back up their claims, their eventual claims to the police. And you can see this person taking like the tiniest little jelly bean and placing it in the hand of a child. It's sad stuff, you guys. I don't know. Am I missing anything with this setup? It's been described as the fire festival for kids.
Yeah. The one of the actors, I think it's Kirsty Patterson.
That's
who
right.
portrays the sad wonky doodle.
Yeah, the sad wonky doodle. Yes.
Yeah. Is actually doing their best. And there was a later interview with The Independent, I want to say, where several of the actors, or actually one of the actors who played Willie McDuff.
He's the one. Yeah, because they did it only for like half a day.
Yeah, he talks about it. And they have this classic moment where they're like, well, we knew it was messed up, so we went to the pub and let it blow over. But they got the job offer, you know, sight unseen from like Indeed.com or something. And I think there was, in the beginning, a bit of a trend toward vilifying those actors who were just trying to work. They were not like, they were not the boardroom of the, what is it, Noel, the House of
Illuminati.
Yeah, they were not, they were hired guns on this one. And I just want to give a shout out to Patterson, because it sounds like, outside of those viral clips, it sounds like she was doing her best in a weird situation. And peek behind the curtain, I know Matt, Noel, and I, and Doc, I would hazard you as well, have found ourselves in weird situations where we have to do strange things. Matt, I'm thinking specifically about the time we were explaining cryptids to a bunch of raucous kids in Maryland, and they were yelling at us because they knew we had a monkey. That is a true story.
Yeah, it's true. I'm thinking about a time I worked at a private club and I got paid to pretend I was Middle Eastern.
Whoa.
Yes.
Are you not Middle Eastern?
Nope. Not at least. I don't think so, but maybe. Aren't we all in some way? But what I'm saying is, like, I've been in a situation where I was getting paid, I was acting, and I thought I was doing great when I was a kid. I was a kid. If you look back at it, it's like, what is happening right now?
I didn't have to do anything problematic, I don't think, that I can recall. But I worked for a children's science center for a time where I did like the science show where you did the, you know, the static electricity on the balloon and things like that with kids. And it was fun. It was a glorious time. But, you know, it's stressful. Kids are tough. Kids are a tough audience. And it takes, you know, a lot of planning and coordination to make them happy at an event like this. And this
I still do career days at public schools. By far the toughest crowd ever.
Can I just say, I pushed that thought, that memory out of my head, Ben, doing that performance with the kids specifically, the monkey. God.
Oh, that one. I thought you pushed meant when they made you pretend to be Middle Eastern.
It's back.
I'm sorry. It really, oh God.
And I came up under the auspice of the Grand Old Opry. Let's move on.
Sorry.
Well, I just wanted to, this is a really great X. Is that what you call the individual things? From username at Cheerwine, who sums it up beautifully. You're 6 years old. You live in Glasgow. You are told you will be meeting Willy Wonka and eating chocolate. You arrive. You are given a single jelly bean, buttered popcorn flavor. The Babadook is there.
Because to your point, Noel, there is a jump scare there that is something that would be, I don't want to say it should be verboten, but one would imagine if one were a parent, it's the kind of thing you as a parent would want to know your kids are encountering before you go into it. So they got a hard time, and we get it. The four of us get it, folks, and probably you listening along at home. Live productions are tough, right? Theater is tough, but it's also Fire Festival. That's the best comparison. Fire Fest for kids.
Just to wrap it up, it's when you read the script, which I just wanted to read a tiny little excerpt of, again, fully generated by AI, clearly not edited at all after the fact. It paints a pretty cool picture that I'm sure would have been really neat if they executed it. There's magical bubbles popping and, you know, twinkling lights in the sky. There's a spooky forest. There's a confrontation between the unknown, who, by the way, is an evil chocolate maker who lives in the walls of the chocolate factory and is Willy. He's not even Willy Wonka, by the way. He's Willy McDuff. Need to mention that. Is sworn enemy, right? This evil chocolate maker who lives in the walls. There's some stuff that they have this confrontation at the end of the script that involves this, you know, Harry Potter style battle of shooting powers at each other or whatever. And then it ends with the unknown being vacuumed up by a giant vacuum cleaner. Because, by the way, the coveted item, like which you'll remember from the film and the book, the everlasting gobstopper that Charlie, you know, is supposed to steal and give to Slugworth. And that's how he passes the test to win the factory. In this one, it's something called Willy's anti-graffiti gobstopper, which tidies up everywhere. Whenever you eat it, it also somehow tidies up and helps mums and dads, but mostly mums. It says all this in the script. So it's there's a message here, too, about kids cleaning their rooms. But just really quickly, this is how the script describes this relationship. This fiendish foe is long coveted. This is Willie speaking, by the way. One of my most cherished creations, the anti-graffiti gobstopper, a marvel of confectionery science designed to aid, not just any soul, but the tireless guardians of cleanliness, our beloved mums, and yes, dads too, but especially mums, from the endless scourge of dirty socks strewn about by youthful adventurers. Then there's a joke about Viagra, kind of, and it's and the stage directions alone are worth the price of admission. But I think that we could talk about this for way too long. But I will. I think we'll put a stop on it right now. But geez. What a fun, relatively harmless, I guess, is part of what makes it so fun. I think these people are probably going to get their money back. They weren't, conned out of thousands and kept hostage on an island like with Fire Festival. So it seems a little less, less of an inconvenience. There were people that came, on trains from far away who are now demanding their train fare be refunded as well by the House of Illuminati, the founder of which made a statement apologizing, said that the holographic equipment didn't come in time, which is what led it to being the sad display that it ultimately was. So there you go. Live and learn. And by the way, there's also apparently a film in production already about the unknown, because he was the head of the whole charade. Let's take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsors, and then we'll be back with another piece of strange news. Live Nation presents Concert Week.
From now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 summer shows.
That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage,
Alanis Morissette,
Cage the Elephant,
Celeste Barber,
Dierks Bentley,
Janet Jackson,
Meghan Trainor,
Peso Pluma,
Sean Paul,
Sum 41, and many more.
For way less.
Grab your tickets now through May 14th to see all of the artists you love all summer long.
For just $25 each.
Visit LiveNation.com/concertweek to buy now.
That's LiveNation.com/concertweek to buy now.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
And we've returned. Hey, before we get to the main story I want to talk about, guys, did you hear the one about the snowmobile lawsuit against the government?
Yeah, watch where you park your copters.
Oh, I thought that was a joke setup. That's awesome. No, I've not heard about
this. It is. Well, it's this weird situation. There's some actual injury involved in just a weird situation. So in March 2019, this Massachusetts-based attorney named Jess Smith was riding his snowmobile through this place called Albert Farms. It's an airfield in Worthington, Massachusetts. It's at night. He's had one or two beers, at least according to his statement. He's not drunk by any means, at least according to him, but he's riding a snowmobile at night, and he's going really fast. Mm-hmm. And unbeknownst to Jeff, on the trail, there was a parked, non-illuminated Black Hawk helicopter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just continue. I'm not going to do the thing.
We'll do the thing that we'll talk about really quick.
All right.
So according to the story, the crew of that Black Hawk helicopter was just doing what they were told. They flew down from New York's Fort Drum for a night training exercise at this airfield. But Jeff had no idea that was happening. Jeff was just riding along with his snowmobile. He collided with the tail end of the chopper, literally the tail of the chopper. Flew through the air, broke a dozen ribs, punctured a lung, suffered severe internal bleeding.
Use his left arm at all.
He had to be airlifted to a trauma center, lost the use of his left arm. He's gone through numerous surgeries, and he's been living on federal assistance since the crash and living with his parents. So, messed up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he has been suing the U.S. government for quite a while. Right now, the suit he's looking for $9.5 million in damages to cover all the medical expenses, lost wages, and, according to him and his attorneys, to hold the military responsible for parking a blacked out Black Hawk on an active snowmobile trail. That was fun to say.
You nailed it, man. That's a tongue twister.
There's poetry to it. Drop the beat.
But yeah, I don't know. Any thoughts, guys? I think it's crazy that, I don't know, you would never, at least I would never expect to encounter a blacked out Black Hawk like that in a place where I thought it was okay to just take a vehicle.
And I'm sorry, just to clarify, this is a stealth craft. So if it's blacked out, right, is it like really hard to see? Is that part of it?
It's more that it's not illuminated.
Yes.
So given the weather at the time and the time of night, and given Smith's expectation, right? The argument is reasonable expectation. So you could say, for instance, if we finally pull the trigger on buying our bunker out in the mountains, and then we're all having a good time on our four-wheelers, and all of a sudden one of us four-wheeling in the dark smacks up against a thing.
Dude.
Yeah, and that thing is owned by the U.S. government. With whom does the liability fall? Is it Uncle Sam, or is it the person on the other vehicle?
Oh, I mean, like you said, it's active. It's sort of the equivalent of parking an invisible truck like in the middle of the road. I mean, again, I'm sorry I'm leaning into the stealth thing. I know it's not invisible, but it is dark, very darkly colored. And if the lights are completely off, you would not see that coming, especially if it were whiteout-y type conditions like it might be. You know, you could be at full speed. I mean, that's obviously what happened, right?
Well, let's think through analogy too, just to interject this. Let's say, for instance, let's change the circumstances a little bit, just to add context to the legal argument. So what if Smith is on an established snowmobile trail, okay? He's not just freestyling it through the woods. This is an established snowmobile trail. And there is an unexpected anomalous vehicle directly in that path. So for instance, for anybody who's a fan of off-roading, for anybody who's a fan of driving around unpaved streets, you know, let's say you were doing something like that. And, you know what, here's a better one. Let's say you're on a state road and you're driving home and it's late at night. And all of a sudden there's a jet in the middle of the road that you're driving on. And you just go over a turn or you hit a hill the wrong way and you don't have time to veer. For anybody who rides a snowmobile, you know that it is very difficult to, like, quote unquote, stop on a dime.
Oh, yeah.
So in that case, again, who is liable in that situation? I don't know. Yeah.
Is this one of those situations, though, where it's like the government doesn't make mistakes? This is not our fault because we refuse to own up to it because we were never there? Or I don't know. Like, what are they saying?
So the government, this has been going on again. It started 2019. In 2019, right? So the government has attempted to outright dismiss the entire case based on some older some older laws and just some older rulings, like the Federal Tort Claims Act, because the reason why the helicopter was there was a policy decision, had nothing to do with the crew. The crew had no idea that they were landing in this area that was a an active snowmobile route. They're saying that, oh, in our policies, there's nothing that requires that crew who's running that helicopter to illuminate it. That's that we don't have anything that states that. We didn't know nothing. We did nothing wrong. It's Smith's fault for driving 65 miles per hour on a snowmobile, which is really fast.
It is fast. Are there posted limits on these types of motorways?
Whoa, fun police. No, you're right. You're right. That's an excellent question. Also, there's another question, too. Like, if there were, and I don't know how far the courts will go in entertaining this, but to the point about illumination, right? Like, what illumination would have mattered? Is it sort of, because this was not a planned landing, right? Like, they weren't this, it wasn't part of their immediate mission to land there. It's something they had to do.
So it was an emergency maneuver of some kind.
No, it was part of a night training, right? That might, I don't mean to contradict. I think this was night training.
Why didn't they park on the shoulder?
The argument is that the crew had no idea where the tail of the craft was actually on this active trail. Right.
And it makes sense that the crew would not know that. But then the reason I'm getting to the illumination argument is, like, to Noel's question about pulling over on the side of the road versus just stopping a broke down car on the highway. If you, and we have a lot of fellow conspiracy realists who drive semi trucks. Right. Mm-hmm. So, like, there is a well-established operation for landing. And if this is training, then, you know, you would enact that operation, right? You got to rehearse before you go live. In those cases where you have a car pulled over, you have all kinds of emergency flares and things like that. So for anyone driving a tractor trailer, a semi, you know that if there are engine problems, mobility problems, you have a set of procedures. Things like road flares, or even the little triangles you're supposed to set in
some
front
cones
and
at the
behind
very least.
The vehicle. Yeah.
They sell those at Walmart and places for non-commercial vehicles, like for your vehicle, that they just flash red lights, but they're sufficiently bright to warn people. That's all it's about.
That's the question, Matt. Like, at this, I don't know much about the, we know it was night. We know it was snowing. Was there any illumination that would have mattered?
I would argue, if I was Smith's attorney, that yes, even if he's traveling at 65 miles per hour, if he sees something glowing, even slightly on the snow like that, because the ground is covered in snow, so it's going to be way more reflective, any light that you put out there, right? I think he would have time to at least move, you know, away a bit to the left, let's say a couple of feet, because he only clipped to the very tail end of that machine. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think his attorneys have a point there.
Yes.
But agreed. But again, these are military professionals training for a specific situation where you're going in at night in the dark. So they're doing what they're supposed to be doing to train correctly. I don't know.
Is this your main story, Matt?
No, but that's okay. This was I like talking about this with you guys.
No, it's good. I just didn't realize it was going to generate so much conversation. There's a lot of questions. I feel like they have to be liable. It certainly seems like they weren't following procedure, you know, if that's what matters, if they determine that they did not follow protocol, because it seems like anything outside of that isn't going to matter.
Well, it also goes, I think there is a reasonable, again, we are not lawyers. I think there is in this country, I think there is a reasonable expectation that you could argue here, right? Like, this community seems to be unaware that there were training exercises happening, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you can already kind of game out the back and forth of it. But what you can't get around is the idea that a totally innocent dude just having a sick time on a snowmobile got his life ruined. And he got his life ruined when he was doing the right things. He was just riding a snowmobile on an established trail for that. He was going to go home. He was going to have a great night. And now he is probably up to his neck in medical debt, combined with a multi-year struggle legally against one of the most powerful entities in the world, which is the United States government. And that seems pretty, when I maybe I'm putting an editorial thumb on the scale, well, but I don't know.
Editorially speaking, though, doesn't it seem like at this point they would just help him out for optics alone? Like, why do they always have to be right? Why can't they just be like, you know what? It was a bit of a whoopsie. You know, we're going to help you out with these bills.
Oh, and get in front of this question. The snowmobile does have lights. Is that correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Snowmobile has lights. But again, you're going through forested areas that have openings where there's way more field basically covered in snow than trees.
And dense trees, right? Turns, like probably hairpin turns. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. And shout out to the crew, because when they heard that smack, they got out immediately and started helping the guy.
Yeah, the first responders were the guys who were training.
Yeah,
and thankfully they knew, you know, things like first response to somebody who's injured like that. They couldn't immediately save him, like, and just fix all those problems, but they were able to at least triage him enough to get him on a flight to, because I think that he had to get airlifted almost immediately. Again, because internal bleeding, punctured lung, dozen mm-hmm. broken ribs. Mm-hmm. Yikes. Guys, we're barely going to touch the other story, but let's do it. So at least we talked about it a bit. We have a first here in these old United States. Firsts don't come along very often anymore, but we've got one. Mm-hmm. The first person in the United States to be prosecuted for smuggling greenhouse gases into the United States.
What?
It's happening right now.
Why?
In the good old Southern District of California.
How? okay, wait. Smuggling gases into the U.S., not out of.
Yes, specifically hydrofluorocarbons.
Oh, we don't like those. They're bad for the ozone layer. Right?
Those are so tight, man.
I'm sorry, to what end, if I might ask?
Well, this person, his name is Michael Hart. He's 58 years old. He lives in San Diego. He is accused, he stands accused of bringing those hydrofluorocarbons in and then selling them on Facebook Marketplace. So at least according to all of these documents, it's saying that he put these hydrofluorocarbons in containers into his car, covered them up so he could get past, you know, I guess customs as you go through the border right there when you get the check, the border check, and then basically held them until he could sell them on Facebook.
Facebook?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Okay, granddad.
but I mean, that's a way to sell things. That's a viable way to sell things these days.
If you want to get scammed, it's terrible on there.
Oh, really?
Facebook. Oh, dude.
I've never
tried selling some furniture on Facebook Marketplace, and I got way more bots, you know, than I got actual people. I swore to never do it again.
Well, I've not learned my lesson yet. I'm going to try one day, I'm sure. I'll forget that you said that, but I can't. I look forward to it. But this person, Michael Hart, he faces 13 separate charges. I'm just going to give you a couple of them. Conspiracy, importation contrary to law, multiple counts of selling imported merchandise contrary to law, and criminal forfeiture. He could face decades in prison if convicted on any one of the charges related to illegal importation of hydrofluorocarbons. And we have to just bring this up, guys. This all has to do with a newish thing from 2020. It was a law that arose in 2020 called the AIM Act, AIMACT. It gives the EPA the authority to reduce production of hydrofluorocarbons, reduce consumption, I'm not sure how you do that, of hydrofluorocarbons. Those are the two main things that this AIM Act does, right? Hydrofluorocarbons, you may remember as connected to or related to another thing. What are they called, Ben? CFCs?
CFCs.
HCFCs, maybe?
Chlorofluorocarbons.
Yes. So these are refrigerants that you will find in your refrigerator. Everybody, right now, you've got some of these in your house. Do you have an air conditioner in your house. You probably have some of these gases that are, you know, in strategic places in your house that have to do with cooling it.
And they're not illegal in that sense, or they're being phased out, or what? I'm still a little confused about what the law is around these substances.
Well,
and who's paying for this stuff on Facebook Marketplace and why? I'm sorry if that's too many questions.
I think, and I don't know, I haven't seen the details like that are this granular, but I think if you're in the market for HFCs or CFCs like this, you're probably working on air conditioners or some kind of home HVAC systems as your job, because those refrigerants are extremely expensive. And you often have to go to somebody's house, if you're a service person, and refill the refrigerants within their AC system or their refrigerator.
And maybe getting them through legal means requires a lot of licensing and hoops and stuff like that. And this is just a quicker route to that.
Theoretically, or it's a way for him to make money, right? He can buy them cheaper in Mexico.
But the reason the people would buy it rather than go through the proper channels is because it's either cheaper or easier to get, and they don't have to, you know, fill out some forms or something, maybe. I don't know. It's just a thought.
Theoretically, it would be easier to buy it on Facebook Marketplace like that than go through all the channels, I'm assuming. But I don't know that for sure. We're going to check back in on this and see how this first turns out. He recently appeared in federal court. He pleaded not guilty this week as we record this, and he's going to be showing back up on March 25th to hang out with the U.S. District Judge Jeffrey Miller. Exciting stuff, everybody. All right, let us know if you hear anything about this or if you hear anything about HFCs and this new AIM Act, and we'll be right back with more strange news.
Live Nation presents Concert Week.
From now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 summer shows.
That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage,
Alanis Morissette,
Cage the Elephant,
Celeste Barber,
Dierks Bentley,
Janet Jackson,
Meghan Trainor,
Peso Pluma,
Sean Paul,
Sum 41, and many more.
For way less.
Grab your tickets now through May 14th to see all of the artists you love all summer long.
For just $25 each.
Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to buy now.
That's LiveNation.com/Concert Week to buy now.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
And we have returned, fellow conspiracy realists. You may recall that not too long ago, we covered the concept of the fragile thing that makes the current world run, the internet. Before we get to that, because it is going to be a bit of a weird bummer, a bit of a mystery, I wanted to share with you guys, Matt, Noel, Doc, I wanted to share some quick things. One thing to talk about, which may be good news. Did you guys hear that credit card fees are going to get capped in the United States?
Is it actually happening?
It's something that will hopefully happen. Late fees with credit cards are going to be capped at $8 instead of the average of $32 per overdraw. And given the serious rate of credit card interest in the U.S. and the accelerating economic inequality, I think that's a good thing. If you have, I'm mainly bringing this up as a mention, fellow conspiracy realist, if you have a credit card debt of any sort, please do pay it off as soon as you can. That stuff is predatory. No hyperbole there, right? Like, we've all seen that happen to people we know.
It's such a tough situation because they rack up so quickly. Mm-hmm. The way our society functions now, you'll throw your credit card at things and you will not realize you've racked up $100, $200, $300. And you're like, oh, crap. How did I spend that much money? And it's, I swear it's because of that disconnect now with the card or our phone or whatever the electronic transaction is now. It's so easy to overspend, I guess.
Right. Or even to be forced in a situation where that is your only strategic move. Yep. Hopefully that is good news. Please write to us. I think there's a credit card episode that might be on the way, whether it's ridiculous history or stuff they don't want you to know. We can say for sure the way credit cards work and the way indeed credit as a concept works is something they don't want you to know in the West. Ask yourself, why don't you get financial literacy as a core class in high school?
Because you're a battery man. That's all you are. Dude, we need to talk about Capital One buying Discover. That's a huge deal.
Shut it down. No, the show's over.
$35 billion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yikes.
Yeah, absolutely. So that is hopefully good news. Also, in a stunningly late to the game opinion, the London School of Economics has concluded the thing called trickle-down economics, aka horses and sparrow economics, as it was once called, aka tax cuts for the wealthy. Turns out it doesn't work. Oh, they figured it out. Happy 2024, London School of Economics. Last thing before we get to the main story.
Ben, yeah. You feed the horses poop, then the sparrows are satisfied?
Yeah, it trickles down.
Oh, through. It trickles through. Got it.
Yeah, right. Gravity-wise, I guess, because the horse's mouth is further from the poop. Whatever. This was one of the bedrocks of Reaganomics, and it turns out it was a grift the whole time. And it's a grift that continues today with disastrous consequences for everyone listening. Even if you are benefiting from it in a short-term environment, there is a long term. There is a horizon ahead. And this makes me think of something. Guys, I don't know if we'll get to the main story, but it is important. We'll have to at least mention it. There's something on my mind. We, all of us on the show now, we live in urban or suburban environments. Do you guys hear car alarms often?
Yeah. I always assume it's mine. And it's weird that I don't actually know what mine sounds like because they're all kind of different. But it's usually not, thankfully. But man, I do.
Doc, can we get just a sample of like the stereotypical car alarm?
Oh, God.
There it is. Everybody tuned out. They heard it and they ignored it.
So weirdly enough, where I live now, I do not hear that. But if I'm in Atlanta, like we're going to a shoot or something, like I definitely will just catch it. If I've got my windows down rolling through Atlanta, I hear those sounds all the time. Up here, I hear what I think are house alarms in the distance because sound carries differently out here in the boondocks.
With less noise pollution.
Yeah, but I swear I hear
house alarms are also like penetrating. They're like, yes. Like laser gun sounds, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel like if we all lived further out in this mountainous compound that I fantasize about increasingly, then a car alarm would be more effective. A house alarm would be more effective, even if it was just a recording of one of us yelling, "Hey!
Call the cops!" Seriously. Seriously. Some dude's out here yelling to call you guys. I just called.
So the problem is, and I think this is what we're getting at specifically here, Noel. The problem is that those things, when they become ubiquitous and familiar, just like when you're driving in the city, Matt, they're easy to ignore, mm-hmm. right? They become part of your sort of sonic environment. Like Noel, when is, for instance, in your neck of the woods, when is the last time you heard a car alarm and went, holy smokes, I better go outside.
Jimmy's stuck in the well. Like, I better. Right.
Does that happen?
Never. It's just an annoyance, and it's noise pollution. That's all it is.
So unfortunately, a similar thing is happening in hospitals.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. The hospital.
Wow. Beats. That was a turn, Ben.
I'm doing a little conversational parkour. So we started with the good stuff. Now we're going to do the other ones. Like if you work in the medical industry, if you work in hospitals in particular, first off, thank you. We recognize the caliber of your work, and we understand the emotional toll it has to take, and indeed the physical toll, especially in an ongoing pandemic. Hospital workers, it turns out, hear up to 1,000 alarm noises per shift. This is coming to us from New Atlas, courtesy of Paul McClure. And this just came out this month as we record. And what happens when you hear all those beeps, even if you are a trained professional, is that you will encounter semantic satiation, you know, or you will encounter sensory overload. So like semantic satiation is where you take a word like ambassador and you just say it so often or hear it so often, it loses its meaning. It becomes a series of just random noises.
Say your own name in the mirror over and over again. It'll start to sound real weird in your head. Like it's a interesting phenomenon. It doesn't even take that many times. And I can speak from personal experience of recently in a hospital with a loved one. These alarms happen all the time for pretty innocuous reasons too. They're not all coding events or like flatlining events. Some of them are just, the battery and the IV pole needs to be replaced. And I had to go get someone several times, mainly because it was just obnoxious and we were, you know, unpleasant in the room, and they were none the wiser until I told them about it. But again, you have to assume that there's, you know, if it's really serious, it'll flash a light or do something extra, one would hope. But what are you finding, Ben?
We always want to assume that there is someone at the wheel, right? And unfortunately, that is not always the case. As McClure points out, McClure themselves, being a former ICU intensive care unit nurse, McClure points out that a study found in the journal Critical Care Medicine discovered that only 15% of all of these alarms, all these hospital beeps in a critical care environment are, quote, clinically relevant. Which means that you'll hear a ton of beeps and only 15% of them will be the hurry up and runs. That will lead to what is portrayed as alarm fatigue, desensitization. Just like if you live in a city, you hear car alarms all the time. You think somebody just bumped into some other car when they were parking. Somebody clicked their little key fob wrong. And you might not immediately think a car is being broken into or a serious situation is escalating. I don't know, man. I just want to point that out. I don't know what to do with it. It's just, it's getting me rethinking a lot of things.
We need a new position in all hospitals, and that is the alarm technician. And
the minder.
Town crier.
Yeah, that's all this person does. They just hear the beeps. They go check. Oh, that's nothing. Hear the beep. Go check. Uh-oh, help. Hey, over here. It's like our car alarm, right? Mm-hmm. It's exactly like our car alarm.
So I want to shout out two of the authors of the study that McClure also cites. These are Joseph Schlesinger and Michael Schutz, who are looking into, just like with car alarms, they're looking into how changing those sonic notifications might help medical professionals be on the ball. Perhaps we could build a hierarchy of sound there, and perhaps that already exists. This is something that we can only learn about. We, not being medical professionals, we can only learn about it through terrible personal experience, as you indicated, Noel, as we've all been in that situation at some point, or we can learn about it through the magic of the internet, unless...
Uh-oh.
The pivot. Yeah, the turn. Unless our internet gets cut off. Do you guys remember when we recently did that episode about undersea cables?
Most definitely.
It rings a bell when you put it in that context, but I'm not super versed on the nature of this region particularly, or like the conflicts that are going on.
We're going to talk about the Red Sea as we end our recording here.
Wasn't that the place that we focused on as being one of the most vulnerable areas?
What? No way.
No, really? We did, right?
Yes, we did. Yeah. So what's like a quick hot and dirty recap of undersea internet communication?
The internet, as you know it, if wherever you are on the continent which you live, it flows from your continent through these undersea cables that are buried or sometimes just hanging out at the bottom of the ocean. And it travels, let's imagine, all the way from North America to Africa, all the way from parts of everywhere. Every continent basically is connected up through these snaking undersea cables, and they are actually the internet tubes. If you imagine the server for whatever service you're using that you're accessing via the internet isn't on the continent where you preside, then you are accessing that stuff from a server that is across these tubes.
Perfect. Yeah. So on September 20th of 2023, as the humans reckon the calendar, we published an episode about what we call the underwater internet. Spoiler, that's a redundant phrase, just like VIN number or ATM machine. The internet is underwater. And ever since the days of Samuel Morse and the telegraph, that has been the case for global communication. Satellites are very important and also likewise fragile, but way more of your daily global online activity is going through tubes, or depending on those undersea tubes. And recently, that came to the fore of the conversation because in the Red Sea, several tubes got cut. We're talking about we'll give you the names of these lines. And this comes to us from HGC Global Communications out of Hong Kong. One of the lines is Asia, Africa, Europe 1. The other one is the Europe, India Gateway. And then there's CECOM and TGN Gulf. This affected 25% of the internet traffic flowing through the Red Sea. This is just like, it might sound weird to talk about a bunch of zeros and ones on the same level of a mining resource or oil, but it's very much the case in global civilization today.
Because these are international transfers of money often. That's what's going through these. That's one of the primary things that happens through these.
Yeah. So what the initial reporting said, I never thought we'd be in this position, you guys. The initial reporting says that the Houthi forces in Yemen had purposely cut the cables. And to be completely transparent, in our previous episode, we pointed out the vulnerability, and indeed, you could argue that we predicted something like this occurring. However, also, in fairness to our little initiative here, we did not say we were going to do it. We didn't name any specific force that was going to do it. We pointed out the vulnerability exists, right? Is that okay to say?
Yes. And just to be clear, we weren't the only people talking about that for the past couple of years, because one of these things. It's like, once you realize that's how it happens and that's how vulnerable it is, I think it's right to say, hey, maybe we should find something to do, because a ship's anchor has breached these cables several times since we recorded that episode, just accidentally because they dropped anchor in the wrong place.
And that is the most plausible explanation here. Again, we're not making a larger comment regarding the current instability, the massacres against civilians in Yemen, nor are we talking about the other problems on the horizon. for that region. What we're saying is it has always been a statistical inevitability. It has been a statistical certitude that something this crucial and this vulnerable would be damaged in the wake of chaos. And what most likely happened, as we end tonight's program, is this. The Houthis are targeting ships, killing some ships, and when these ships get hit, some of them are big old boys, and those big old boys have big old anchors. And those anchors, when a ship is compromised, when it is damaged, those anchors just drag willy-nilly across stuff. So what probably happened, best guess right now, what probably happened was a consequence, an unforeseen consequence occurred. And this is not, again, this is not us defending anyone. If anything, this is us pointing out once again, when elephants make war, man, it's the grass. The grass is the first thing to go.
Turns out the same thing happens when they make love. Sorry.
That's true. You know, but well, making love is kind of like making war.
It's a little weird. It's not like a little person to say that. Make love. It's like almost as bad as make whoopee.
Oh, jeez.
Make love as war?
Yeah. That is metal right there. That is metal AF.
Radical affection, radical empathy. We want to hear your thoughts on this, folks. We want to hear your thoughts on the vulnerability of this fragile thing we call human civilization. We want to hear about the last time you encountered military craft in the wild. Shout out to our fellow conspiracy realist who hipped us to a very true story about aircraft being stored in a Walmart in the middle of nowhere. We want to hear about your experience in Willy Wonka land.
Oh, God forbid. Yeah, if you went. I mean, it sounds like a lot of the reports back, too, are like, well, that was worth the price of admission just to be part of history.
You know, if they reopened, they would make money hand over AI fist.
Exactly. AI, they haven't quite figured out fists yet with AI. They still look a little
the fingers little are weird.
Yeah, hands in general. Can you put your hands on top of my hands? No. Would that be okay, guys?
Why did you snap a picture
for the website?
Why did that get to you so hard? That one guy. All right. Okay. Well, we're gonna call it an evening. We're off to Noctivigate. We hope you join us. We try to be easy to find online.
Boy, do we ever. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff, where we exist on Facebook, where we have our Facebook group. Here's where it gets crazy. We are also Conspiracy Stuff on YouTube, where we have amazing, exciting video content coming your way. We were all really tickled before this episode, if you couldn't tell, because we were looking at some edits that Matt is working on for an upcoming video series, hopefully, that we are all just so excited about. So you'll see that on YouTube. You'll also see that stuff on Instagram and TikTok, where we exist at the Handle Conspiracy Stuff Show.
Hey, do you want to call us? Call 1-833-STDWYTK. It's a voicemail system. When you call in, you'll have 3 minutes. Give yourself a cool nickname and let us know in that message if we can use your name and message on the air. If you got more to say than can fit in that voicemail, why not instead shoot us a good old-fashioned email? We are
the folks who read every email we get, so long as those internet cables work. Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Live Nation presents Concert Week.
From now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 summer shows.
That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage,
Alanis Morissette,
Cage the Elephant,
Celeste Barber,
Dierks Bentley,
Janet Jackson,
Meghan Trainor,
Peso Pluma,
Sean Paul,
Sum 41, and many more.
For way less.
Grab your tickets now through May 14th to see all of the artists you love all summer long.
For just
$25 each.
Visit LiveNation.com/concertweek to buy now.
That's LiveNation.com/concertweek to buy now.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Attention, true crime enthusiast. Searching for a way to unwind after diving deep into the mysteries that keep you up at night? Look no further.
Introducing Lazarus Naturals, your trusted companion for CBD relief. With a commitment to transparency, Lazarus Naturals oversees every step from farm to doorstep, ensuring purity and quality you can trust.
Visit LazarusNaturals.com today and discover how CBD can help you decompress and recharge for your next investigation.
That's LazarusNaturals.com.
Lazarus Naturals, your partner in unraveling the mysteries of true crime.
Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.